Thank you for the introduction, Dr. Kearns. As he said, I'm Wendell Hutchins, and today I'm going to be presenting on some of my research I've been doing on the effect of post-application irrigation and the addition of soil surfactants on fungicide movement and efficacy. So the premise for this research and kind of why we wanted to look into this is a lot of the samples we get in our diagnostic clinic that Lee Butler and Dr. Kearns run on our putting greens, creeping bentgrass putting greens, and ultra-dwarf Bermuda grass putting greens, a high percentage of those samples are caused by soil-borne pathogens. Things like Pythium root rot, summer patch, take-all root rot, like we've heard a little bit about today. These are detrimental pathogens in North Carolina and throughout the Southeast and really throughout a lot of the country. So we want to come up with best management practices for managing these very difficult diseases. And we hypothesize that adding post-application irrigation, as well as adding soil surfactants, tank mixing those and applying those pre-treatment, hopefully would mitigate some of these issues we've seen with these soil-borne pathogens. So to understand how these fungicides move in soil and turf grass systems and the ways they kind of they move in our soil systems is we have to understand their physical and chemical properties. So there's a lot of aspects of that, things like solubility, the hydrophobicity, things like that. But the main one I want to point out are the compound's KOC values. And to define a KOC value, essentially that's the carbon binding coefficient of an active ingredient. And so it's essentially how readily the fungicide binds to organic carbon. So a higher KOC value would mean that the fungicide will move less in the turf grass system, move less through the soil. Lower KOC value means it has a higher potential to leach. To kind of give a perspective, glyphosate, which most of you know what that is has an extremely high KOC value, so it means it's readily bound in the thatch layer and in the organic matter. Something like dicamba has a KOC value of around 2, so it's highly prone to leach. Well, most of the fungicides we deal with have moderate to very high KOC values. And the ones I have in bold on this chart are the compounds that I've been working with, and that's propiconazole, mycobutanil, tebuconazole, and azoxystrobin. And all four of these compounds fall in the moderate to very high KOC range. So they're not likely to move through the soil system. It's very, very difficult to actually push those fungicides down through the root zone to come in contact with the target pathogens that are infecting the roots. And as most of you know, a lot of the fungicides we use don't actually move down in the plant. They're typically a properly translocated, localized penetrance, contacts, things like that. So we have to come up with a way to push these fungicides down in the root zone to actually come in contact with these soil-borne pathogens. So we had three research objectives. One was to determine how various post-application irrigation amounts affected fungicide movement in bare soil. So that's no plant material, just straight soil. And we use C14 mycobutanil and C14 tebuconazole for these studies. So we did the radio label chemicals so that way we could track the movement of the fungicides. The second objective was to determine how mycobutanil moves in soil when we add a soil surfactant in with the application. Does it increase the movement of the fungicide downward in the soil? Does it remain the same? Does it actually reduce it? The third objective was to examine how various irrigation amounts post-application affected efficacy of propiconazole and azoxystrobin on Magnaporth epoe or summer patch. So for the first couple studies, the ones with the radio label compounds, we wanted to determine how these different post-application irrigation amounts affected the movement of mycobutanil and tebuconazole. And we did this in 90% sand, 10% peat moss soil. So it was similar to a USGA greens mix you would see. And we looked at five different irrigation amounts. We had no irrigation, 0.32, 0.64, 1.27, and 2.54 centimeters of post-application irrigation. And then for the second radio label study we did, we added the soil surfactant, polyoxyalkylene polymers. That's kind of a mouthful to say, so I'm going to refer to it by the trade name from now on, Fleet. We looked at that at the high rate, so essentially we tank mixed it with our application of mycobutanil, and we wanted to see if that actually affected the movement, the downward movement of mycobutanil. So the methods for these studies were pretty straightforward. Essentially, all we did was we coated lysimeter walls with soil to reduce any kind of preferential flow. We packed these lysimeters with our greens mix, USGA greens mix, to a bulk density of 1.46 grams per centimeter cubed. We then saturated those soils for 3 or 4 days, and then we allowed them to drain to fill capacity before we applied our fungicides and post-application irrigation. So when the soils were at fill capacity, we applied our fungicides, our radio-label fungicides, and then after application, we went back with post-application irrigation, and we did all this by pipetting. Then we kept these soils at fill capacity for 4 days after treatment. On the fourth day after treatment, we sampled the different soil depths in 2.5-centimeter increments. We took these samples and combusted them in a biological oxidizer, and that was able to give us the concentration of fungicide in each depth. So here's the data we got. I'm going to orient you guys to this graph, and the next few graphs will be the same orientation. The y-axis is the percent microbutanil recovered, and the x-axis is the sampling depth in centimeters. The various colored bars are the different irrigation amounts we used. And I really want to say three things about this graph. The first thing is, regardless of post-application irrigation amount, no matter how much it was, at least 50% of the fungicide was retained in the top 2.5 centimeters of soil. And remember, this is bare soil. There's no plant material present. So a lot of it was getting bound up in that top 2.5 centimeters of soil. The second thing I want to point out is as the irrigation amount increased, we did see increased downward movement of the fungicide. So with the highest irrigation amount, we saw movement down to around 10-centimeter depth, which is essentially how deep the root zones go in most turfgrass systems, or at least managed root zones. The third thing I want to point out are the two typical field application rates for irrigation, 0.32 centimeters and 0.64 centimeters. That's an eighth of an inch and a quarter of an inch. That's what a lot of superintendents will put or irrigate their greens with, so those are the more feasible amounts. We did see increased movement of microbutanil downward all the way. We were able to recover significant amounts in the 5 to 7.5 centimeter depth, which was encouraging. So even though a lot of it was getting retained in the top portion of soil, we were able to see some good movement down to a deeper depth in the soil. For the second run of microbutanil, same story, very, very similar results. Most of the fungicide was retained in the top 2.5 centimeters of soil. As the irrigation amount increased, we saw increased movement of microbutanil. And then once again, our field rates, we were able to recover some at a 5 to 7.5 centimeter depth. But when we added a soil surfactant in, we saw some interesting results. On your left was microbutanil applied with no soil surfactant, essentially tank mixed with the application. And you can see the graph is very right skewed. So once again, it's just like the first two runs we saw without the soil surfactant. A lot of the material was retained in that top 2.5 centimeters of soil. But when we added Fleet in with our application, the surfactant, we noticed a more even distribution of the fungicide throughout the soil column. So essentially, it did increase the movement of microbutanil downward in the soil. Even with no post-application irrigation, we were able to recover a pretty good amount at the 5 to 7.5 centimeter depth. And with the highest amount of irrigation at 2.5 centimeters, we were actually able to recover some at a 12 to 15 centimeter depth, which is quite a bit of movement. So we haven't seen those results without the addition of a soil surfactant. So that was encouraging to see. When we looked at tebuconazole, this is without soil surfactant. We noticed a similar trend that we did with microbutanil. The majority of the compound was retained in the top 2.5 centimeters. The only difference was between tebuconazole and microbutanil is we actually saw a little less movement. Not a lot of fungicide was moving past the 5-centimeter depth. Only with the two highest irrigation amounts were we able to see fungicide move down to a 5 to 7.5 centimeter depth. The remaining irrigation amounts, everything was in the top 5 centimeters of soil. So I think one of the main reasons for this, why there was differences in tebuconazole and microbutanil, is because tebuconazole has a higher KOC value, as I mentioned to you guys earlier, than microbutanil does. So a lot of it is retained in that top portion of soil. It's bound up very, very readily. So I'm going to switch gears a little bit and talk about the influence of post-application irrigation on summer patch control. So we want to look at efficacy. We did this on PAN A4 creeping bentgrass, and we looked at two compounds, propiconazole and azoxystrobin, and we had four irrigation amounts. It was no irrigation, 0.25, 0.32, and 0.64 centimeters of post-application irrigation. And the reason we chose these four amounts are because this is what you're typically going to see in a field setting. No superintendent usually is going to irrigate with anything more than 0.64 centimeters after an application of a fungicide, so we wanted to keep it on the applied side. We took turf quality ratings twice per week throughout the study. And once again, the materials and methods for this particular study were pretty straightforward. We inoculated sterilized rye grain with our pathogen Magnoport depoli, allowed it to infest the rye grain. Then we inoculated our plants with the rye grain. We put the rye grain at the soil interface, sprayed our fungicide, applied our post-application irrigation, and let them take off. We took our turf quality ratings twice per week for 9 weeks. And then at the completion of the study, we took a few samples of roots, looked at them under the microscope to make sure that the symptoms we were seeing was, in fact, caused by Magnoport depoli. So we completed Koch's postulates. We were able to see this nice growth cessation structure, which is diagnostic of Magnoport. And here's the data we got. On your y-axis is your turf quality. On your x-axis is your irrigation amount in centimeters. The big picture here, as post-application irrigation amount increased, we saw increased turf quality and reduced disease severity. So with no irrigation after application and with 0.25 centimeters of irrigation after application, that was pretty bad turf quality. But as irrigation increased, we saw statistical differences in turf quality. And we analyzed these means using Fisher's protected least significant difference. Here's like a visual of what I was just showing you on the graph. On your left are your uninoculated controls. So turf quality is pretty good on those. Those weren't inoculated with the pathogen, but on your right is your inoculated ones. And on the top right, you can see the turf quality is pretty high. It doesn't vary much from the controls. And that was with your highest amount of post-application irrigation. And you can kind of see a gradient as it goes down. And in your lower right-hand corner, that was no post-application irrigation. So the symptoms of summer patch were pretty detrimental on that one. So I kind of like this picture because you can see the differences in the effect that post-application irrigation has in controlling these soil-borne pathogens or managing these soil-borne pathogens. One last data slide I want to show you guys. We've done some work with in vitro sensitivity on Magnoport depoli and for azoxystrobin and propiconazole. And, you know, as I mentioned in an earlier part of the presentation, these fungicides don't readily move typically in our turf grass system. So it's kind of discouraging if you're trying to manage a soil-borne pathogen that is infecting the roots. If you can't really get it down that far in the plant, you know, how do you actually manage these things? Well, the good news is it doesn't take a high concentration of fungicide to actually control a lot of these soil-borne pathogens. In this work, we found that it takes less than 0.1 milligrams per liter to actually inhibit 50% of the growth of both. For both azoxystrobin and propiconazole. So to summarize, as irrigation amount increased after our application of our fungicides, the fungicides did move further downward in soil. Secondly, the addition of a soil surfactant moved the fungicide deeper in the soil as well. Thirdly, at higher KOC values, you see reduced movement of the compound downward in the soil. So I think that's the reason we saw the differences in tebuconazole and myclobutanil. And then lastly, at higher post-application irrigation amounts, turf quality increases and disease severity did in fact decrease. And with that, I want to thank all my committee members, Dr. Jim Kearns and Dr. Travis Gannon, as well as Dr. Dave Hsu and their lab for all their help. And I also want to thank everyone who funded this research. And that, I think I'll open it up to any questions if we have time. Yes.
Got time for a couple of questions.
How do you extrapolate this to a golf course superintendent? Because most greens obviously are designed for most of the water to go laterally off the green and not down.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, if you're sitting and understand why you did it, but what time level would you apply that?
Okay, so your question was, how would you extrapolate this essentially to golf course superintendents? So, like, how would you apply this, right? Well, this is kind of very basic research. We're trying to just understand these compounds, understand how they move, and we're going to take it to the field setting in the future, potentially with future students working for Dr. Kearns. So this is very base level research, but the main point is we want to understand, we just want to provide those turf managers with any best management practice we can for these soil-borne pathogens. So anything we can do to help. So adding a soil surfactant, adding higher amounts of post-application irrigation. I know a lot of the greens are designed to push water off, but anything you can do to get any downward movement will, in fact, help with disease management. Yes.
So I have three questions and comments.
Okay.
The first question is, for your design, do you have a control of irrigation only? You only irrigate a certain amount, which is not a maximum. Because you want to rule out the effect is not due to irrigation only.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
we had on inoculated controls where we didn't have the disease present. Yeah. Exactly.
Exactly. Second, when you show the in vitro study, I think the in vitro study said less than 0.1 milligrams per liter. I feel that may not be translatable to a field.
Yeah, and I know you've done a lot of work with MSMA and things like that. So, yeah, it's tough to extrapolate it, but the point is it doesn't take a very, very high concentration to manage these pathogens. Yeah, so, yeah, when you take it from the lab to the field, it's kind of a big step. But the point being was if we can get any concentration of fungicide, no matter how little or much, it at least will help. And it doesn't take very much to inhibit the growth of these pathogens.
Right. I did that research before you did. Only I did it in the field, in the field green. Of course,
and
I talked at
2 o'clock or 5 p.m. I'll have to listen to it. I'll come by, absolutely.
All right.
All right. Thank you.